From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Noel is not here today, but he is joining us in spirit.
Yes, and he's not going to be gone forever, right?
No.
He will return shortly, but the show must go on. In the meantime, my name is Ben. You, regardless of what name you're wearing today, are you. Because names are just sort of another kind of clothing that we put on things, aren't they?
A mask, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a cowl, a cassock. Yes, aside from, sorry, my vaguely creepy talk of names and nomenclature, we are here to talk today, or to explore today, a thing that I always love. I was inspired by this, to find this in our previous episode, Lost Civilizations. We've talked about several, right?
Oh, yes. We have extensively gone over, oh man, I'm trying to think. Atlantis, certainly we've hit.
It's also Lemuria or Ur. We've talked a little bit about various locations of Atlantis, people who allegedly predicted its rise or fall, or, you know, its location. And we've also looked at missing cities in South and Central America. Mm-hmm. We haven't looked at some of the early African nations, which I think we could explore.
Absolutely.
More in depth. And then I don't know if we ever looked at Çatalhöyük, the Turkish.
Sorry, what did you say?
Çatalhöyük.
No, I don't know this.
What? It's the one that changed. It's the one that changed the way we see human civilization. Oh man.
Oh wow. Okay.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it. And I know, listeners, and I'm sure that's very familiar, to many of us. We'll check it out. But our story today starts with a fellow named Sheldon Lee Gosling.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sheldon Lee Gosling is an American Egyptologist. He knows 9 ancient languages. How many do you know, listener? Matt knows 0. And he's taught at numerous institutions.
Yeah, he's got a lot of bachelor's degrees, several masters. PhD is from the University of Madison, Wisconsin. I think he went on to get a PhD, the history of medicine. So this is a smart guy, Sheldon.
A little bit.
Yeah. And, he seems to be driven by his passions. He spent years researching in China, where he was also teaching at a couple, those are the universities he had taught at. For more than a decade, he had been playing around with the idea that there was a baffling mystery to the emergence of written language in China. He thought that the earliest writing in China could be connected with writing in the Indus Valley, where an early civilization stretched across parts of India and Pakistan. Writing did not appear in China until more than 1,000 years later, in the second millennium BC, and there's very little evidence of how it was developed, and no idea whether or to what degree other languages in the West may have influenced it. So, for a linguist, amateur, or professional, this is fascinating stuff. Before we go on, let's take a look at the rise of written language in China and abroad. The very first known written language that we have access to now comes from the Sumerians. First example of writing in general appeared in Mesopotamia, 3500 to 3000 BCE. Egyptian was, again, so far as we know, developed independently around the same period. The Chinese writing system, the first writing system there, appears around 1200 BCE. No obvious reference to other writing systems. So it's interesting to think about, but we're thinking about the holes in the theory, right? Mm-hmm. We have this example here with Egyptian rising independently, right? But then I'm sure there was interaction after that. But otherwise, you know, unless we have something to back it up, unless we have something to back up this idea of language migrating somehow from the Indus Valley, then this is little more than a nice conversation for the folks at the linguist conference when they're in the hotel bar.
So the idea is that the earliest writing in China and all these other places all came from this original Indus Valley group of people or culture?
At least in the case of China.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was more of a, huh, what if?
Got you.
And nothing was going to come of it, at least that is, until 2013. And we'll tell you what happened after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy.
In 2013, our protagonist, Dr. Gosline, was shown a mysterious set of ancient inscriptions etched into flat stones found by farmers in Guangxi province.
Gosline found that several of these characters appeared to belong to this Indus script. The Indus script is an undeciphered set of symbols from more than 4,500 years back. Others, he thought, could have been Persian cuneiform turned 90 degrees.
Interesting. Then, in April 2014, our doctor made a field trip to the area where these stones had been found, and he discovered clear evidence of long human occupancy and an advanced civilization that extended at least 140 kilometers along the Yuzhang River, now hidden in dense tropical overgrowth. So this place existed and then was lost.
Right. Yeah. That's his idea. He presented initial reports to Chinese officials. This was published in Chinese news outlets, and he kept working in the field through 2014. If Indus or Persian characters have made their way to southern China, it means that people there had an extensive trade network that connected them to South Asia and the Middle East. Again, it might also mean that imperial conquerors from northern China had wiped out evidence of a thriving writing culture in the south, aka a lost civilization. Either way, it would undermine a traditional view of Chinese history, which goes like this. The Chinese culture developed exclusively in the north and diffused outwards and southwards. The Han majority claim that they encountered barbarians in the south, which they called the Yue, who were thought to be less civilized than their conquerors, spoke a different language. As of 2016, right now, Gosling's observation about these inscriptions has not been proven. It hasn't been proven, rather, that they're Persian cuneiform.
Okay.
Which would be crazy to find something that far south and east in China from Iran at that time. If his conclusions are correct, Gosling has indeed found a lost civilization, an ancient one responsible for bridging a gap between cultures. And his discovery raised questions, with huge and potentially dangerous questions. What the hell was Persian cuneiform doing in this remote village in southern China? Could it be real? And if it was real, what did it mean?
So before we go any further, Ben, I think we have to address dragon bones.
Yes, yes, you're right, Matt.
And that sounds silly, right? That sounds like, what?
Yeah, right. That's a nickname. You're right, because we need to address the story of how Chinese writing was discovered, or the earliest forms of Chinese writing. So, for a long, 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 long time, farmers around the Yellow River Basin area would dig up these bones. They would find turtle shells and ox bones and would take them away from their fields, and they would sell them to people who practiced traditional Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. In 1899, a scholar who was getting these bones also had scratches on them, right? A scholar found these bones either as getting it as a prescription for some kind of treatment or buying them from an antiques dealer, this person realized that those are early forms of Chinese characters on these bones.
Whoa.
And the people who sell these, the farmers, the so-called dragon bone dealers, wanted to keep their location secret. Of course, that's just good business. But in the 1920s, a team of archaeologists discovered the bone source at a place called Anyang, a site that's a few hours south of Beijing in the Yellow River Basin. And they found thousands and thousands of dragon bones, all carefully inscribed with prophecies of the past.
What?
Yeah, and they figured out what people were using the bones for. They were using them to tell the future. So they would, here's what we think happened. They would throw the bone in the fire, and they would read the cracks that it made, and then they would write down what they saw. As a prediction, the big thing is they had names of kings on some of these bones, and those names matched with later records of the Shang Dynasty, which had ruled in the second millennium BCE. And up to that point, and this is the late 1800s, up to that point, a lot of people had considered the Shang Dynasty largely a legend, at least in the West.
That is strange.
So the discovery of these bones was big, right? At least for the West. It reinforced the belief that Chinese civilization began there at the Yellow River, that the writing arrived independently, but it didn't match with the stuff that Gosling found. Because those inscriptions were so far south, and they were on the border, I mean, like, on China's border with Vietnam.
Yeah, that's a long distance away than you would expect. We're talking... Well, let's take it to U.S. standards.
Or sure.
Standards? Let's just look at the U.S. What's a comparison?
It would be like traveling from New York to Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And also, very little work has been done in this area, in Guangxi, because the climate's subtropical and it's considered historically a backwater. So we have some questions, right? Gosling believes that he has found a lost civilization, which is totally possible, but there's a big gap between plausible and possible. He thinks he found this because of writing, but I don't, like, what's the first question we would ask him?
Well, I mean, is he mistaking something? That's the first thing, right? As a researcher, as anyone who's looking into evidence, trying to find something, you have to check yourself first.
Yeah. And then also, is this confirmation bias? Mm-hmm. Is this like and this is just a question that would come up, you know, if somebody is looking for a lost civilization, already believes it's around, has a hunch, and then finds it.
Make the evidence fit your belief. Like that's a danger.
Right. Right. Exactly. The second question would be, could this be a hoax? You know, like the Piltdown Man or something. We know that hoaxes are distressingly common in archaeology. So those first examples might have been brought in by farmers, but he had found more of these sideways cuneiform Persian-looking characters in official archaeological dig in the same area. So if the inscriptions were forged, the person who was forging them would either have to be able to fool the archaeologist, or the archaeologist would have to be working with them. Mm-hmm. And also, Chinese scholars had never seen anything like this. This was new stuff. And when he visited the site himself, he thought he wouldn't find much interesting stuff other than these inscriptions. Until, that is, he noticed that there were these tall, symmetrically spaced rocks at even intervals, and they lined up along particular diagonal lines. They had deep crevices. He thought the space was somehow special, and so he started mapping it out. And he says that he found a man-made platform of megalithic construction. Think kind of Stonehenge-y, you know? And he said that he found a carved chair or throne, and he was convinced that this might be some kind of calculating device, maybe using astronomical terms. Chinese scientists, for the record, are much, 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 much more skeptical. And Vietnamese authorities are saying, hey, maybe this is just an ancient site of early Vietnamese culture, right?
That's possible.
Gosling believes that this is indeed a lost civilization. Investigators who contacted some of the Chinese scientists say that the Chinese scientists essentially told them, you know, you're not going to be impressed when you come see it. We have to wonder, is there a cover up, or is there like is Gosling knowingly telling the truth? Does the Chinese government have an interest in this?
It seems like the interest could be protecting at least the agreed upon history in the area and of the entire country and the region.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be one of the first accusations people would make, would be that this is being covered up to preserve the official narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Gosling's hardly keeping this secret. He does public lectures. He's part of a couple of international organizations, and the Chinese academic community apparently still couldn't figure out what to make of the writing. At this point, the claim remains incredibly controversial. It's rooted in linguistics, right? And there's not too much, at least official archaeological activity in that area, in that Guangxi area. However, that's sort of tantalizing, isn't it? Because we don't know, to quote some old politicians, we don't know what we don't know. It's an unknown unknown. And with this in mind, we are hoping to learn more about lost civilizations and reach out and contact Dr. Gosling, if possible, to hear more details. He has some papers available, and he is far from the only academic looking for evidence of civilizations and time in history forgot. Now we'll pause for a word from our sponsor.
Welcome back to the show. Guess what time it is, guys?
Shout out corners.
Okay, our first shout out for today comes from Sam. Sam, you wrote to us via email. Sam says, you did an episode over a year back about celebrity deaths and briefly mentioned Hitler faking his death. I heard a rumor that Hitler did not go to South America, but to Glacier National Park in Montana, where he lived out his days in a lodge amongst some other close personal Nazi acquaintances, including his bodyguard, who confessed to his daughter's boyfriend on his deathbed in secret. I was wondering if you guys could do an episode or even a little snippet on this, because I'm interested in your findings. Thanks for getting me through the workday. That's fascinating. I have never heard that, Sam. Have you heard that, Matt?
Nope. Glacier National Park with a good old Hitler in there. Never heard of that at all.
Montana, huh? Because usually we hear a lot of stuff about South America.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, South America is the only major theory I've heard about where Hitler disappeared to, if he did not in fact die.
My favorite of the Hitler escape theories is that he escaped to Antarctica, and that Operation High Jump was a secret nuclear war between the Allies and what was left of the German powers.
With the help of the underground peoples?
Yes, with the help of the underground race. No, I'm laughing a little bit, but of course we do know that cavern systems are extensive, and we know that specially adapted flora and fauna do thrive there. Is there a technologically advanced race that looks completely Aryan yet has chosen to stay underground under Antarctica?
And is there an internal sun or star inside of the center of the Earth.
Yeah.
It's yet to be seen. It's the nicest way we could put it.
As you're being too kind. Yeah.
But hey, it would blow my mind if it got proven somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would just destroy our whole understanding.
Now, we do know that the Germans were planning to colonize and conquer at least part of Antarctica. If you have the inclination to explore a rabbit hole, go check your nearest search engine for New Schwabia.
Yeah.
Do you remember New Schwabia, Matt, when we did a piece on that?
I do, certainly.
Oh, man. New Schwabia.
Gotta annex a little bit of land in Antarctica just in case.
Mm-hmm. It was in Queen Maud Land. It's really at this point, it's just a name that's given to an area of Antarctica. But the hope there was that they would map the area and then establish some sort of beachhead, right? Or mm-hmm. some sort of research center there. They made no official claims. They made no official claims to the area. But in 1981, the non-Nazi government,
mm-hmm.
the actual current German government, built a research center there in 1981. And you can check out Operation High Jump for more information too. Sam, this is fascinating. I can feel the pull. I can feel the call to start digging, around in this Montana situation. I've never heard that. It seems strange. And we know, of course, that with the deaths of any, dictators, any great influencers of people, that there will always be questions about their deaths. There'll always be these concerns, right?
Just through a cursory Google search here, there's quite a bit written about Hitler's grave supposedly found outside of Glacier National Park.
Huh.
Let's see. Something here about a bunker. Discussing Travel Channel. All right, I'm officially going to look into this.
We got sucked in. Okay, so we'll get into that off the air. Matt, who's our next shout out to?
Arnie has written us a bit of a snarky email about our Noah's Ark episode, and I appreciated it. So here it goes. I just listened to your show about Noah's Ark, and if we take the story as it goes, as gospel, and the whole world was flooded, that Noah and his family were the only people spared, I would like to know how the world was populated with 7 billion plus people. Where did all of the ethnic diversity come from? Are we all related? Also, what about the inbreeding? That would, that could be a problem. And certainly with the diversity that we see today in our world with the human population, it wouldn't make much sense. But
we had a lot of people who wrote to us regarding that episode, from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which I appreciate. And we have more emails than we can probably ever get to. But I will have to say that is a question. And to your point, Arnie, we had several listeners who, gave what they believed was a cogent answer for this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they said that certain things were, if one looked at the Bible verse in depth and interpreted it correctly, that there were things that would explain this or make it seem less implausible, or that the story itself was mischaracterized in many ways in the modern day. Which I understand. I appreciate everybody who wrote in. I think we'll have Noah's Ark's emails appearing for a while in our shout-out
decades
corner
to come. Continuing with Noah's Ark, several people on Twitter and email have written to us. We were asking about films that dealt with Noah's Ark or a version of an Ark.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people writing to us about Titan A.E., and
yeah.
I'm a little embarrassed. I've never seen it, so I'm going to have to check into that now.
My spider sense makes me want to say it was on Netflix for a while. I'm not,
It's animated, right?
I believe so. Yes, it is animated. All right. So we have time for one more, listener mail, one more shout out, and that goes to Sergeant L. We're going to go ahead and withhold the name here just because it does address military experience. This is in response to our earlier episode on the military and drugs. The sergeant says, first and foremost, thanks for the great podcast. I listen to a lot of the How Stuff Works stuff. I've just caught up on all your audio. I've watched significant portion of the videos. I like the addition of super producer Noel to the audio. Ben, if you could resurrect the Invisible Man, that would be awesome. Whew.
The voiceover, at least.
Oh, that's a deep cut, Sarge. Oh, man. Oh, wow. I think just people don't know what the... If you've ever seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you'll have a good sense of what our crew looked like having to wear that suit. So Sergeant Elk goes on to say, I've been in the U.S. Army for almost 13 years. I've been deployed to Iraq for a total of 39 months over three deployments. I work in computers, not in the public affairs office, so everything here is my opinion and observations, not of the Army. Drugs are severely frowned upon by the Army as a whole. Drug tests are common. Positive results for illegal drugs are dealt with harshly, including marijuana where legal. If there is no prescription for a drug like Adderall or morphine from a doctor within the test period, then legal action will be taken and they'll probably be separated from the Army. During the height of the Iraq War, soldiers were less likely to be kicked out but were still punished. I have never seen nor heard of a prescription that was not a medical necessity. Alcohol and nicotine and caffeine are being discouraged by the Army as an institution. Since the late 90s, the Army had the policy of deglamorizing alcohol, or deglamorization of alcohol. Commands can't use alcohol to promote events or promote its use. The Army Substance Abuse Program, ASAP, can and will help those that are addicted to drugs or alcohol. Smoking cessation classes are offered to anyone using tobacco products. Caffeine and supplements are being openly discouraged. The sergeant goes on, that being said, Army culture is still quite strong in alcohol, tobacco, caffeine, and supplements. Drugs and alcohol are used to self-medicate by some, as with the general population, unfortunately. We have deep-rooted traditions involving alcohol, like the grog. The grog started as a way that all the soldiers would get their leftover alcohol and mix it together to celebrate or relax. Now the grog is a ceremony used to remember past wars and the fallen at army balls, sometimes with alcohol and sometimes without. As you mentioned, nicotine and caffeine are used a lot for stimulants. So many soldiers low off energy drinks, coffee, no-dos, and dip during long missions or shifts in Iraq. There was an energy drink with nicotine and a Red Bull slushy machine in the PX in Baghdad. Finally, there's little to offer gym rats to get them to not take supplements. I said, sorry for the long email. As someone who knows some of the stuff they don't want you to know, most secret info is really boring.
I don't know if I believe that, Sarge.
Well, I'm not concerned about most of it then. thank you so much for writing, and please stay safe. Please stay safe out there. That goes for everybody in the armed forces who's listening to our podcast. And we've been getting some really great feedback, some great details about this. The part about a prescription being a medical necessity reminds me of our earlier email from the psychologist. Remember that? Who said that,
yes,
that during war times, when you had to have somebody still pulling a trigger for longer than nature would intend.
Give them whatever cocktail you can.
Give them something. It was relatively vague, but I imagine there's several different possibilities there. So we know that, we know that the culture of the U.S. Armed Forces is changing. And in times of great stress, however, people do still, tend to self-medicate. And if you haven't listened to our episode on the history of militaries and drugs, please do check it out. If you are part of another country's armed services, we would also like to hear of your experience with these substances. But for now, that concludes our...
And if you want to write to us, find us on Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff. Also on Facebook, Conspiracy Stuff. And if you want to find us on Instagram, send us a picture or like things. Honestly, I don't really know how Instagram works that well. Either way, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff and you just want to write to us, send us an email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.